Hey, this is Bianca Stone. We are listening to a recording of myself and the poet Arisa White doing a Q&A after a poetry reading at the Next Galaxy retreat that happened a month ago. Thank you so much to Leanne Ruel and Candace Jensen, who moderate the Q&A. Please enjoy.
Pass the mic. I was going to make a joke, but it's not going to go well. I really want to leave most of this time to the students because I feel like you probably have a lot of questions for these guys. But I really just... this is ridiculous. This is so... Rewind. But really, in all seriousness, Yeah, and I just, like, look at you and I just laugh, so it's problematic. I just want to hear about the way that you approach teaching. I mean, simple, point blank, what makes you love to teach?
Here, you start.
Yeah, there's a row.
Okay, there's a row. All right, what do I love about teaching? Well, I think what I love is that all the students that come to a class are there usually voluntarily. And it means that they really care about their poetry and they really want to improve upon their poetry. And I see... I, too, want to improve upon my poetry, and I really want to understand what makes a poem a good poem and what makes a bad poem a bad poem, and what we're doing here, you know. So I love teaching with people who have the same passion that I do and that we can sort of figure it out together, and I can discover new things with the students. But also I feel like people... often have such, there's so much bad information out in the world about how poetry works and how to write it and teach it. And usually it's just a simple product of the sort of like status quo of the educational system, which is kind of, it's just uninspired, you know, and it's old and it's outdated and nobody's fixed it. And so it's not anybody's fault. And you know, maybe they've had like one or two good teachers in there in the past that have given them the spark that's really helped them develop their voice. And then I love coming in and sort of like just adding to that. And seeing people, I really, all I care about when I'm teaching is like getting people to write better poems. And however, I don't even understand right away how to do that, right? So we're sort of like figuring it out together because everybody's got different needs, and there's certain universal things that we can talk about as a group. And I definitely felt that this time. I felt like everybody was very open to ideas about how thought works and thus how poetry works. And really, you know, it was challenging. It's not nothing to say to your class, think a thought, unthink a thought, and have your non-thinking part of your brain converse with your thinking part of your brain. Go. And they did it, and I think that's what just makes me so excited about teaching, is moments like that.
For me, it's just sharing. I get really excited about sharing. I'm like, oh my God, I read this great book. I put myself through this strange process to unearth this silence I've been holding deep in my soul, and I think my mother has too, so I need to write this poem to heal all of us. Let me share this process with you, you know? So it's like I just get really excited about how my own life as a poet, an artist, a creative, has opened up these doors for generating and creating more. I reflect on that, and then I get to bring it into a classroom space to share it with other people who are seeking pathways into their own creative energy and how to, like, tap that and let it just flow, like, deep and long and forever inside of them. And because I just love language and I love to play, I have, like, reimagined the classroom as a kind of sandbox, as a jungle gym, as a salon, as a bathtub, whatever we need to, like, let go of whatever walls and socialization has stiffened us and blocked us. And we come into these spaces being like, I have writer's block and I haven't written in a long time. And I want the classroom to be this place of love so that we can get to our vulnerable parts and, like, hear our own rhythms and our own hearts so that we can create our own syntax and our own breath and our own poems and understand how our bodies are teaching us how to form and structure the content of our own beautiful site. So sometimes I think about, you know, teaching as like a kind of spiritual opening up and as a heart practice, as a way to create this space where people can learn the things we don't learn in school, which is intuition, gut, listening, being, like, uncomfortable and discomfort, and then finding a way to put your comfy clothes on.
Oh, I help you. Sorry. That's okay. There's a row. So my question centers on I'd love to hear both of your thoughts, since we are just coming out of this 4-full-day retreat, which created a container for creativity and created a vessel for a new kind of... I know Bianca's going to really respond to that kind of language because of her whole alchemy thing right now, but the vessel of the retreat... the way that that created a container for vulnerability, and any thoughts that you have, not about this retreat in particular, but just about coming into retreat, coming into community, and the kind of intimacy that this provides.
Can you repeat your question?
It's an open-ended question, and it's more of a statement, but your thoughts on... the retreat or poetry retreat as container for possibility and vulnerability in community.
Yeah, I agree. I support that statement. And I also think it's a place to sort of network and just, like, geek out. It's like, I feel like in these kinds of spaces, I don't have to apologize for my circular, metaphorical, lyrical responses to things. You know, like, I feel got. I feel held. And something about that then becomes a space that I can tap into when I'm out in the world and people sort of are amazed by the fact that I write poetry and I teach poetry. Like, I don't feel like a freak. And I don't have to carry the energy of defending myself. And so I think spaces like this allow us to sort of drop those defenses around being creative people in a world that needs to see us producing towards a capitalistic end.
Yeah, and I think the people you surround yourself with... is everything in poetry, and a lot of the growth that happens is the challenge that comes with the people that you're in contact with and whose poems you're hearing, and the energy that you play off of with your workshop. You know, workshop is like... retreats are like an example of what... it's like a condensed version of what could be in your life. I think, like, for... you know, I have Leanne and I have Candace in my... you know, we work together, but we also, like, create together and we write together and we share our work. We do the weekly workshop together. We have this, like, core group of people that come and they show their poems and we've seen them evolve and we give each other real feedback and we're real with each other and like we're encouraging, but we're also like challenging. And having like some sort of like bubble of like, of it's like a safe place where you can challenge one another. And that's so crucial in writing. And when I think about, you know, a lot of times when we think about writers, we think of people sitting alone in a room at a, you know, at a computer writing a piece. And that's obviously a huge part of it. It's a solitary act, but the energy that comes and the inspiration from one another is really the other side of the coin. And I think we really wanted to build a space here where we promoted a kind of pedagogy that we believed in that was generative, you know, that wasn't just the same old workshop model, which is, you know, it has its benefits, but it's not enough, you know, like there's a lot more exploration that can happen. And I think being a poet a lot of the times is also like having mentees and having people that you can inspire and bring along with you on your journey, and then they can go off and do the same thing with other people. And so it's like creating spaces like this, it bleeds out often. You're all going to go home and you're all going to like share this with everyone in your circle, and then, you know, it'll go on and on. And yeah, so it's interesting to think about the containment too. Yes, we do need a container in order to play, you know, in order to feel okay and safe to play with one another. And I think it's this group is great. I feel like this group is really good. I couldn't be happier with this group. Like, the energy is really high. Everybody's really positive. Everybody's really challenged. We're all just concerned with playing. I think playing is really, and that's why, you know, we want to have like workshop teachers here all who all are on the same page about what it is to play. It's not about like shaming people in workshop and being like, you don't know what writing is, you know. Rewrite this, get out. It's like, there's like such a toxic old way of doing things, and it's like, no, we're done with that. So yeah.
Does anybody have any burning questions? Yeah.
Let's see. How long?
Okay.
I'll let that be.
So speaking of containers, and people you surround yourself with, but also when you're alone. You know, we're all coming out of this amazing workshop setting, and there are many ways that people in that solitude, you know, keep working and keep growing and keep, you know, giving themselves challenges. Some people do translation. Some people, you know, write it out of a book they love by hand. Other people might, you know, mark the scansion of a certain poet, or you know, read one person's entire works or whatever, or give themselves, you know, exercises. What do you, each of you, do to kind of keep that learning, the learning part of getting better, going, like fresh and constant?
The learning part of being a poet. Well, I think we should all follow our obsessions naturally, and I always have like other side things going on that inform my poetry interests and that are different and that I can integrate into my poetry. Right now, it's really psychoanalysis theory and philosophy. It had been like some into like Gnostic religious exploration and stuff like that, but like for me, like it's important to have other interests outside of poetry and to like dork out on like research projects, and also I'm like a visual artist, and so that for me that stimulates my poetry too, just like doing other things. But like I think that's what you mean.
On the craft and the You know what I mean? Like the taking the workshop or MFA.
Right. Like I have an MFA and I teach poetry now. But I think teaching is great for me. That's always inspiring for me because I do a lot of research to prepare for the class, like making copies of poems that I think are great examples of poetry and then like reading things about poetry. I actually love reading about poetry. So like I brought into my class a lot from Ed Hirsch's like How to Read a Poem. And you'd think that like at this point, like I wouldn't be reading a book called How to Read a Poem. But actually I go back to that book all the time. I just open it at random and just like read passages out of it. And Matthew Zapruder's Why Poetry. I read Empson's Seven Types of Ambiguity. I love Gaston Bouchard's The Poetics of Space. Like I read about how poetry works all the time. And then I also read poetry all the time. And that's for me, like I don't read poetry and not like it. When I read poetry, I want to write poetry. So it's always an indication of like if I'm writing or not. And moreover, I have people in my life that I trust that I share with. So Leanne and I have like a poem a day email thread that we email each other poems. We try to do it every day. Of course we don't. But like it's always there and we always come back to it. And like we just email each other new poems. And that is crucial because otherwise we wouldn't be like, it's good to share just like your raw crappy drafts with somebody that you really love and trust and that, but also like I want to take classes too. You know, some of the classes that we offer at the Roostone House when we have a teacher come, I'll sit in on that class and be a student. And I think that's great and really important too. And I also participate in our weekly workshop that I'm facilitating, but also sometimes I'll bring in a poem just to be like part of it too. But Arisa.
Similarly, doing other things, dance classes, you know, going for long walks. And as a teacher, I feel like, okay, I read things for my students, but I'm really thinking about this question of craft. I couldn't appreciate a sonnet until I sort of was able to embody a sonnet. Like, I could understand a villanelle when I lived that those repeating lines out in the world where it made sense. So for me, and I think after my MFA program, I set out to sort of live in the world as much as possible, and that is my lessons for how to craft poetry, and also how to create forms and find new structures to see the things that are, you know, like a questionnaire for, you know, I don't know, going to call, like using a questionnaire form as something you can appropriate and make into a poetic form. Looking at the ingredients on the back of the peas and then thinking about how can that structure be a way in which I contain something? How can I craft things out of my lived experiences? So I'm really curious about the living body being the poem. And how can I make that translation from life to the page? How can I understand form as something living? And in thinking about retreat spaces and sort of like literary communities, when I became a part of Cave Canem, that in that particular kind of space with other poets of the African diaspora, and being with them sort of gave me the permission to innovate, to take these Western European ideas and make them my own. And so recognizing that I'm a part of a tradition, a Black literary tradition of innovation, gave me the permission to break shit apart. So I'm figuring out how to break shit apart, how to uncraft a thing and then make a craft out of it. And just even thinking about a craft as something to get you from one place to the next. So if I'm constructing a form, how is it transporting me? Where am I going with it? How am I putting the reader through a particular kind of journey by constructing this structure for us to take flight or to float or to go out of space or to journey deep through the veins or something? So I'm reading a lot of stuff that is kind of either, you know, spiritually based. I read a lot of manifestos, cultural studies, people really rethinking a lot of our historical past in these really innovative ways, applying, like, for instance, one book that has been so mind-blowing for me is In the Wake by Christina Sharp on being in blackness. And essentially, she states that as a result of the transatlantic slave trade, we are all in the afterlife of that. Not only that, she plays with the word wake, right? We're in the wake of a ship. We have the funeral wake. We have the wake up, right? So it's I'm loving finding scholars who are using metaphors to, like, reanimate our historical past, which then gives me the permission to be a poet within history.
The essential. I'm fascinated by this. I want to know what you mean by the essential.
Right now.
Yeah. What does the essential mean to me? I don't know what it means to you.
What is essential in poetry?
Yeah, well, I guess. Oh,
this
feels so wonderful.
It's, I know. Welcome to the club. You know what it makes me think of is the element of poetry that is, well, one of the definitive elements of poetry is that it's condensed language, and in a way you do have to sort of take what's essential and have that be the poem, in terms of, like, all this noise and thoughts and padding that goes in with writing. And you sort of can, like, whittle it down to the essential. But then on another way of thinking about essential, I think maybe in a more, like, existential way, like, what essentially matters? What is essential in my experience to focus on in my subjects, in what I choose to write about in my poetry? And that can look so different to everybody, right? Like, it could look really ordinary. It doesn't have to be like a cataclysmic event or something, but, like, when you distill something down to the essential matter, which is what poetry is, it's a distillation, it's a raisin, I think that does have something to do with what is essential. Although I think what may be problematic about the word essential is that it may seem hierarchical in some way, that, like, some things are essential and some things are superfluous. But that's true. Some things are, you know, and I don't know, there's a lot of bullshit out there, and I think there's a lot of, like, poetry that's just, like, fucking around and like just might be great to just get down to the essential stuff, you know, just like go there. I don't know why we do that. It's like we're afraid to say something. It's like we're afraid to declare something that is essential. I wonder about that, you know. It's like we don't want to be presumptuous and take some sort of position as someone who can speak for God, you know, and say, I can say what's essential in my poem. And I don't know, it's a product of our history, you know, in all these different ways, that we're kind of squashed down, even in our own poetry, emotionally and mentally, like, that we could be afraid to talk about our own essential nature, and our own essential concerns. Now I'm loving this word. Now I'm excited about it. Now it's going to keep coming up. You know, there is the essential Roostone back there if you want to buy that.